ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame with Dwayne Mullins, as always. We'll talk, of course, about Samuel Piette re-signing with the Montreal Impact in a few minutes. We'll go through some Major League Soccer news, some reaction to Charlotte being named team number 30 in Major League Soccer. But Dwayne, how was watching Sebastian Giovinco playing in the Club World Cup yesterday?
You know what? I turned the TV on, let's be honest here. I told my phone on, and instantly the first thing I saw was the unmistakable image of the little man standing over a dead ball. And I was like, oh.
And then
it didn't work out, but that's fine. He did have a beautiful pass in the second goal, which led me to go, yeah, just give him all the money, bring him back, which I don't know if it's the right move or not, but I do think that if they were to give him all the money and bring him back, he'd be perfectly fine next year at MLS, but maybe it's time to move forward from that. But it was kind of fun. Unfortunately for Al Hilal, they did not get the job done. They had the lead, but they then allowed three after that. It was a very competitive and entertaining game.
And then, it unfolded at the end. Al Hilal got a red card with their best offensive player on the field at, the 77th minute. Yeah. And there was no way back at that point. But they did have at least the lead in the first half. And Flamengo, the better side of the two, of course, came back in the second.
Yeah, and if you're interested in watching the game today, Liverpool versus Monterrey, which should interest most people because we've all seen Monterrey play pretty consistently over the past couple of years. Monterrey has said on the record that they're going to try to, quote-unquote, play with Liverpool. So this could be interesting.
Good luck. Mo Salah putting five past the keeper against Monterrey. I wouldn't be surprised, but yes, that is today, 12:30 p.m., noon, 30 minutes afternoon, of course. Monterrey versus Liverpool on TSN. We'll keep an eye on it. But our lead story today, Dwayne, Samuel Piette re-signing with the Montreal Impact, 3 seasons until 2022 with a option available for 2023. We don't have the financial details, but apparently it's not a TAM deal, allegedly. So that's a positive. The heart, I would say, and the face of the Montreal Impact in French media and Canadian media, Samuel Piette stays in Montreal for 3 to 4 seasons. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if he's named club captain in the next few weeks.
It's a positive, you say, for the Impact. I don't know if it's positive for Samuel Piette, but we'll put that aside for a second. If he's happy, then we're happy, right? And look, you mentioned that exactly. Over the past couple weeks, the two teams that we cover have now both re-signed their central midfielders, who are like core components of their teams that people relate and associate with them. And I think that's, has value beyond what they do on the field. But what they do on the field is actually very similar. Samuel Piette, one of the things that I used to try and illustrate Michael Bradley's worth beyond just the intangibles was looking at how rare he loses the ball, how much he is controlling of the ball in the midfield and is accurate in his passing and is able to sort of unleash the more talented offensive players. And Piette's similar. In fact, when I looked at the two metrics that I looked at with Bradley he was the best in the league. Piette only was a little bit worse, and by a little bit worse is the wrong word. He was basically
a little bit behind, but yes.
Yeah, and with the point being is he protects the ball and is much younger than Michael Bradley too. So it's a good signing for the Impact for sure, and a good signing for Piette to stay at home where he's clearly happy, clearly wants to represent the Impact. I had the chance to interview him. You see him a lot. I had the chance to interact with him during the Canadian Championship a couple times, and it was clear how important it was for him to win that championship.
It's his first trophy. It's the only trophy here. Let me show you. I have image next to me because I was looking at it, and you can see it on your screen now, and I want to bring the conversation to his value and where he fits in the world of football in a second. But the Canadian Championship in 2019 is Samuel Piette's first trophy ever as a professional soccer player.
Precisely. And look, But the other stuff, you know, this is all what he's worthwhile on the non-intangible, and the intangible stuff is important, as we're saying here. You know, he's a very articulate and thoughtful and passionate person about the Impact. And that comes off in English, which is his second language. So I can only imagine he's even better at it in French, Kevin.
In Spanish or in German. He's a smart fellow. I had the chance to talk to him a few times over the years, and I'm looking forward to talking with him this year also during press conferences and scrums. He has a value. His value might be higher here in Montreal than anywhere else in the world. His value right now, according to Transfer Market, is $1.71 million. You're going to tell me it's not that much? But here, let's take a look at this one. Here's a few numbers for you. He ranks, according to Transfer Market, rank number 2 as players among the Montreal Impact. 11th best Canadian player in the world right now, Samuel Piette. In the world, worldwide, in the hundreds of thousands of soccer players that exist in the world professionally, he's ranked 4,279th, the 93rd best player in Major League Soccer. So he is in the top 100 Major League Soccer players, according to Transfer Market. And defensive midfielder around the world, his rank is 333. So those are a couple numbers to put his performances in perspective, because sometimes we're really not judgmental, but we're critical over players from our neck of the woods. And when we look at him, according to an outside perspective like Transfer Market, it puts his performances into perspective.
Well, yeah, for sure. And, you know, people that would criticize us pointing to Transfer Market numbers as being sort of subjective are correct. They are a little, but they do have a lot of data behind them to back them up. And the other thing I'll say quickly on that is when you look overall on the Canadian players on Transfer Market, they are a little devalued because the Canadian passport does not carry as much weight in terms of transfers. And there are certain countries where there would be restrictions, England included. So that actually devalues him a little bit more. So his true value is probably a bit higher than that if he actually were to get into a situation where someone was bidding for him, over there. But, you know, look, it's a good sign that guys like that are sticking around to stay here now, because I think that in the past, what we would have seen, you know, would have been a guy like Piette going and like hooking on with a lower level championship League One kind of yo-yo club. And we would all just been hoping he could have like gotten a hot streak, the team, and made the Premier League for a year. And we would have, you know, but this is better. This is more stable. And I think the fact the league has evolved to the point where it is a better option. That stability of the option is better than going for clubs. And maybe you get a taste of the Premier League, but maybe you also get a taste of League One, right? Like it's just a more stable environment for him.
And also, if you want to look at it in a branding perspective, in a business perspective, Samuel Piette does have a little heart of an entrepreneur. He's got a couple of side projects going on. You can look Airbnb. But for Samuel Piette, the possibilities of monetizing his professional playing career with partnership for car dealerships and things like this locally, this is way more valuable to him in Montreal than it would be in Salt Lake City. Like, I don't think the car dealerships in Salt Lake City would fight over who gives him a car for the duration of his contracts, but it is the case here in Montreal. He's making autograph sessions at sports stores, and they're drawing a lot of people, and sports stores pay the Impact, pay him for him to, well, I don't know about the Impact, but for sure there's some monetary exchanges for him to do. And it's part of the sponsorship, right, with the Impact and Canadian soccer player when it's Allstate and whatever. So he has a draw, and his draw is higher in Montreal than it would be anywhere else in Major League Soccer. That has a value to him also. And we don't know the financial details, but unfortunately, with his performance on the field, I think he would have deserved a TAM contract. Maybe not at the high level of a TAM contract, maybe not at a $1.6 million, which we think is the threshold for a TAM player, but 5-6, yeah. And right now, he was not at that level. There's had to be a substantial pay raise, but I think his value, his branding value also to prepare his after career in 5 to 10 years, however long that is, probably even further. He's still young. We've been watching him play for 8 years at a national team level, and we believe he's so old. He's 25 years old, so he's still very young. But his branding value, his monetary value to sponsors and advertisers, is higher in Montreal. So for him, I'm happy for that too.
You know, perhaps Jonathan, something in line of Jonathan Rosario's contract would have been, I think, probably what he might have hoped for, which is a lower level TAM. Sometimes with the teams, it makes sense to give them a little bit more money that you could then put the TAM on, which then actually hits the cap less. But that's a topic for our geekdom here. Just quickly to finish the thought, I think there's a trend I'm seeing over the last little while. You mentioned the value in Canada and their importance and their ability to not necessarily make millions of dollars off the pitch. They're not, but to sort of have a more comfortable life and to have, you know, more opportunities for the people around them and things like that. I think it's starting to show a little bit more. You look at Cavallini obviously going to Vancouver, Piat re-signing here, you know, to a lesser level, Chris Minella is a player in a Canadian Premier League level that re-signed, signed yesterday for York 9 out of Ottawa Fury, choosing to stay in Canada. That's, to me, three illustrations kind of on different levels that show the value to a Canadian player to stay in Canada now, and it wasn't always the case. So that's an important thing and something that's good to see.
Yeah, it is good to see, and we will see Samuel Piat play for the Montreal Impact for the next 3 years. Before we change gears, let's continue about Major League Soccer. NYCFC Dwayne announced yesterday that in 2020, they will have a four-game series at Citi Field. The Citi Field series for NYCFC, four games, and that is to lighten a little bit their schedule. There'll be weekend games instead of midweek games that it would have been at Yankee Stadium. It's also probably an experiment to see if people will travel when it's more than just a one-off to go see NYCFC at Citi Field. But what do you think, Dwayne? And also, by the way, this news probably makes way for the actual announcement of Major League Soccer's schedule, which probably will be dropping from multiple sources tomorrow. But Citi Field and NYCFC for a four-game series in 2020.
I'm a little less critical of MLS and NYCFC for the stadium issue than some. I think there is an instinct to immediately go after NYCFC in a way that's a little more aggressive than you would if it was another team, because they're attached to City Football Group, which rubs a lot of people the wrong way for sure. They're attached to the New York Yankees, which rubs a lot of people the wrong way, myself included. So that's a lot of negative coming out there, which makes it really easy to go at them. I wonder whether this four-game series at Citi Field might be to test the waters on whether a permanent move there might make sense, because I think that it would be more likely, it would be more acceptable for you to make some renovations to Citi Field to make it more permanently soccer-friendly than it would be to Yankee bloody stadium, which you would not be able to do, right?
They would never be able to do anything with Yankee Stadium. And also the added benefit of the Mets sucking at baseball and not playing in multiple seasons, so you don't get preempted in your own stadium.
Now, the only issue is, of course, that's Citi Field's in Queens, which is their image, and NYCFC's whole image and way they launched and their raison d'etre was to be the Manhattan, New York team, right? And this would sort of betray that a little bit. But at this point in time, as long as they're still in New York rather than New Jersey, I think that they'd be willing to take whatever they could get.
Yeah. Can you imagine if they have to split Red Bull Arena, which it probably will never happen. Let's be honest here, but it is a story that probably has more beneath the surface than just, oh yeah, four games at Citi Field. Yeah, it is, like I was saying, an experiment to see down the line maybe of the viability of a more permanent move or a more even split or 50-50 with Yankee Stadium and Citi Field. Who knows? But maybe just testing the waters, because maybe finding a land in Queens might be easier than finding one in the Bronx.
Yeah, and last thought, their CCL game perhaps being played at the AAA or AA, their minor league baseball park anyway, up in Staten Island, I believe. So they could be the first professional football team, soccer team to play in three separate baseball stadiums. There is a record that I don't think anyone ever wanted.
Soccer team playing in three different
baseball stadiums. Same season, yeah.
Yeah, that is something quite unique to NYCFC.
Unique's a word, yes.
It's very unique. We've talked about Liverpool playing Monterrey today in the Club World Cup at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. They actually played yesterday. The kids did play. And they got beaten humiliated versus Aston Villa. 5-0 for Villa. What was interesting to me is seeing Villa's players scoring and celebrating like they just won the World Cup. I was like, yeah, I guess you didn't check the lineup before you started the game, because guess what? You didn't know these players either.
Well, I mean, that, and but also they're going to the semifinal of a cup competition, and Aston Villa had a long walk in the wilderness for a few years. So it is something there. And then we talked about this the other day when we talked about the League Cup in general, how it matters more to certain teams. And once you get to a semifinal phase, if you're a team like Villa, then, you know, we'll see how the results shake out today. We could have Leicester United and City as the three remaining teams left here. So that, you know, is going to change things a little bit if that's the case in terms of Villa's abilities to win this thing. But nonetheless, you know, it's a big deal if they get two games. It's a cup, an opportunity to perhaps get to Wembley. I mean, look, we in North America in particular, I think, look down our nose at the lesser competitions a little bit too much sometimes. And that even happens in England itself. What do we play the damn sport for? To win stuff. And if you can win something.
That should be on a t-shirt. Do we play this damn sports for? To win stuff.
Arsenal. Yeah, they used to call Arsenal the fourth place trophy, right? Like,
yeah.
And they get criticized for that. And look, there's a lot of teams. The fourth place trophy is better than what the trophy half this league is chasing, which is the Premier League, when I say this, is the We Survived trophy, which is, for God's sakes, sacrifice the possibility that maybe you might lose a point to go after a league. So I get it from Liverpool's perspective. They're trying to win a title. They've got to win this Club World Cup thing. I mean, that's, you know, had they not been playing the Club World Cup, they would have put a bigger lineup out there.
Sure.
But yeah, from Villa, why not go out there and enjoy your day? I mean, yes, it was, I'm pretty convinced. And well, the joke I made on Twitter was that, yes, it's confirmed that Liverpool under 23s would probably be relegation fodder in the Premier League.
They might be not too shabby in the Championship, or maybe more League One. Three games in the League Cup today. Quarterfinals will wrap up after the end of the afternoon. Everton, Leicester, Oxford United, Manchester City, and Manchester United versus Colchester. You can watch these games this afternoon, of course. But before we take a break and come back and continue our discussion this week on Charlotte, Dwayne, when we look at today's potential, we quickly talked about it earlier, the Club World Cup. We do have Monterrey and Liverpool. You mentioned Monterrey is going to try to attack Liverpool. You think they're serious, or do you think they might be being a little bit of a rope-a-dope here and actually play defensively, and who knows what can happen?
In the interviews, in the pre-game interviews, was that they only knew how to play attacking-minded, so that they would do that. That said, look, one thing that has emerged in the last couple of years is that there's been a sort of an understanding by certain teams, by smaller teams, that maybe playing we're not talking about playing loose, but attacking when you have the chance is something you need to do against bigger clubs. Because when you play scared against bigger clubs, which is essentially what parking the bus is, one time out of 100 it works. And we all remember that one time. But the reality is the other 99 times you lose 3-0. You know, it takes you 60 minutes to allow the first goal. But after you allow one, then you have nothing left and they just get a couple more. So, you know, when I look at City this year and how like Norwich and teams like that are running at them, that's exactly where that mentality comes from. Now, the gap in quality between Liga MX and the Premier League might be such that this is insanity, but at the same time, you know, look at the first game of the Club World Cup with the team from New Caledonia. I mean, it didn't work out in the end, but they did actually try and attack, and I think it benefited them against Al Sadd. So, yeah, why not? Go out and enjoy yourself. Have fun. No one expects you to do a damn thing, right? You've already won the Club World Cup from Monterrey's perspective. Monterrey's Club World Cup, this is a good message or a lesson for anyone in CONCACAF listening, that your Club World Cup is won if you get to play at one of the big clubs, and you'd prefer it be the European one because more of your fans know it. So they've already won it. Just go and play and have fun. Like, if it was the Impact playing, you know, Liverpool today, what would your expectations be?
None, but I would still go crazy because that's like a FIFA matchup. That's like something that happens only when you play on the PlayStation. Never happens in real life.
Or in a friendly, but yeah.
Or in a friendly, but there's a trophy at stake. There's there's some maybe financial bonuses at stake. So it's a real competition, quote unquote. It's a real exhibition gala competition. How about that?
Yeah, no, Liverpool's going to try to win it. They're not going to want to lose. Like in a friendly, you know, I watched Manchester City beat TFC 1-0. It was a very painful experience, but I watched, but it was only 1-0 and they didn't score to the 78th minute or some damn thing. They didn't care, right? But if they would at a Club World Cup, because they would not, even though it's not the biggest thing in England, they would still not want to have to go home and go, why did you lose to an MLS team?
They don't want to have the Daily Mirror or the Sun and the headline saying, Liverpool failing once again, losing to a mediocre North American side.
Yeah, I don't know what they would say. I'm trying to think of a cliche Mexican headline that they'd throw there. They'd probably like draw a sombrero on...
Adios, Liverpool.
Adios, sombrero drawn on Klopp's head, something vaguely xenophobic. Yeah, it'd be... Yeah, that sounds like the... Sounds like the tabloids over there, but yeah. You don't want to do that. It'll be I'm planning to watch it, so there you go. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Exactly. I'll watch it as well. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about the reactions of Charlotte being named team number 30 in Major League Soccer and how the other professional soccer clubs in Carolina, North Carolina especially, reacted to the news.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sports podcasting network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. You like Soccer Today, then you will love our Patreon page filled with extra show from the producers of Soccer Today here at the Sports Podcast Network. Five Rings Extra, you will find Soccer Today Presents. You will find also the flagship show on our Patreon page, Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. Yesterday, Duna and I talk about the potential of a Division 2, or at least something that would resemble a Division 2 in Canada. And you can find that show and much more on our Patreon page, available at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Dwayne, I'm going to read to you a little announcement. This is a statement by Steve Malik and the North Carolina Football Club, also the North Carolina Courage. It's the same organization, and North Carolina Courage is in the NWSL and the USL Championship team of the North Carolina Football Club. Here is the statement by owner Steve Malik. North Carolina Football Club wishes the best to David Tepper and the city of Charlotte as it begins its Major League Soccer journey. The state of North Carolina has a soccer-rich history, which the North Carolina Football Club will continue to contribute to as an organization. North Carolina Football Club owner Steve Malik remains encouraged by the strides being made in progressing the Downtown South project into the transformational development that it will be. This project proposes an entertainment district at the southern edge of downtown Raleigh, including a multi-purpose open-air stadium. Our club remains committed to driving the growth of soccer in our region and beyond, and welcome the competition that comes from Charlotte. As the largest youth-to-pro soccer organization in the United States and the home to the two-time reigning NWSL champions, the North Carolina Courage, and the longest continuously operating men's professional soccer team in the state of North Carolina, North Carolina Football Club looks forward to being at the forefront of the beautiful game in our great state. Of course, Carolina used to be called the Carolina Railhawks, and this is the evolution of the Carolina Railhawks. But what do you think about the North Carolina Football Club's statement, and what do you think it means from an organization that has been open about wanting a Major League Soccer club in Raleigh-Durham?
It's kind of one of those things of what are you going to do, right? Like, it's done now, and probably behind closed doors are a little frustrated, and it's a bit of a cynical play that you go with the organization that really has no soccer backing and no experience in it over the one that's actually playing, and not only playing, excelling both at the men's level, but more importantly, in some ways, as a club proper with the best women's, argue maybe the best women's soccer team in the world, right?
One of the top five, maybe, women's soccer team in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's,
got to be frustrating a little bit level. But at the same time, you know, there's a couple things here. I think they're the fact that they're different states. I mean, they're kind of considered the same by many, but they are different. Allows them to say, look, we're still this. This is our area. If you're the North Carolina team, this is your North Carolina team. You can go there. We're not going to stop you from going to Charlotte. But we're your team. We're your home team. And you have the women's side as well, as I said, that is absolutely banger. And I think that that's what you do. You just double down on your efforts to present yourself as a community club and a club proper with the women's program. And they, you know, wish them well, but they're not going to go over the top to say, hey, no, it's yours now.
Well, the term competition was used. Like they, yeah, they did exactly. Say we welcome the competition, which doesn't mean, because I'm going to read another statement here by the Charlotte Independent.
Yeah. Well, it's a different tone as well. Like they're not, you know, saying screw you and pointing fingers, but they're saying we're not backing away, but good luck.
Yeah, they're saying, fine. Okay, well, we're gonna see each other again at some time down the road. And well, if we ever face each other,
the Cup,
exactly,
sure.
It's going to be a derby. Let's look at another similar statement from a different organization, both in the USL Championship. This is the Carolina Derby in the USL Championship. If you don't know, North Carolina Courage, North Carolina Football Club on the men's side, and the Charlotte Independence on the other. The Independence, of course, has a history, a longer history than its name. It has changed over the last few years, and I suggest that if you want to find more about the history of the Independence, we did multiple shows over the last 5 years. Google Soccer Today, 2 South 2 Soccer Podcast, and Charlotte, you will find the shows we did over the years. But this is a statement by Charlotte Independence. The Charlotte Independence congratulate David Tepper, Tepper Sports and Entertainment, and the city of Charlotte on landing an MLS franchise. From the inception of the Independence in 2014, our mission has been to serve the Charlotte area with the highest level of soccer possible and build on the existing foundation for youth development. We are excited the addition of MLS will further that mission. We are actively exploring ways in which the Independence and Tepper Sports and Entertainment can grow soccer in Charlotte together. The Independents continue preparation for the 2020 USL Championship season as renovations to American Legion Memorial Stadium progress towards completion in 2021. Our team will continue the work of earning the support of the Charlotte community. So on one side, the North Carolina Football Club is welcoming the competition. On the other, the Charlotte Independents are giving an olive branch and wants to work with Tepper Sport, which I wouldn't be shocked at all if soonish it is announced that there will be a partnership between the USL Championship team of Independence and Tepper Sports and Mint City, I guess.
Right, like, yeah, please pet us. Like, that's what's happening here. Look, yeah, look, and there's a logic to it. For God's sakes, they're already among the worst attended teams in the USL Championship. And, you know, the comparison I'll make here is one that my fans in the Toronto area will understand very well. They're the Toronto Lynx. There ain't no way they're competing. They can only hope to coexist. So all they can do now is hope that they can get the Charlotte to work with them. And look, had Toronto FC launched at a time where there were USL Championship teams that were serving as reserve teams for the MLS teams, I'm sure the Lynx would have done that, but that didn't exist back then. And that's exactly what the Independents probably want to do and bluntly should do. It's how they can survive and maybe even find something that works. You mentioned that Charlotte, you know, USL level has a lot of history there. History is not always good.
No, right? That's true, because they were I forget the denomination, but I know they were a religious-based organization before 2014. But it was
they
a different
were a
organization.
Christian team, yes.
Christian, okay, there you go. Well, yeah. It was from a Christian sports organization. We've seen this, and we actually have these in multiple cities in North America, the Sun Youth of this world, another organization that has a sports aspect, municipal and community-based organization that was similar to that, and they had a pro sports team in a certain level. That's a long time ago now. Yeah, you're right. It was before 2014. I don't even remember the name. I used to know these things by heart, but it's been too long ago, I guess.
There's alphabet soup of the lower levels of American soccer. It's hard to keep track of.
I got the Railhawks at least, so I got one of the two today.
Yeah, speaking of which, the Rhinos are supposedly coming back in 2021. That's news that we haven't talked about, but we did in the day talk a lot about the Rhinos. even when they were raging.
When they were raging, yes, of course. Yeah, Raging Rhinos of Rochester. I miss my Dinos barbecue. Someone lives in Rochester. Next time you come to Montreal, think about Kevin. Think about me. Stop at Dinos barbecue. Get me some barbecue.
I grew up on Rochester TV. There's an ice cream shop. I think it's called Carvel's. I always wanted to go there because it's looked good, but we never. Rochester was 100 kilometers away, but there was a lake in the way, so we didn't go. Yeah. Anyway.
If you could, like, if you have a hovercraft, you're good. You can just go straight line, you're good. But yeah. You can't.
No, exactly. So alas, we move on. Look, I told you off air, and I'll tell people on air. I have never experienced an MLS expansion announcement and city that has left me as cold as Charlotte. It's just, I am completely indifferent to it. It seems to me like a poor choice, but I don't know. I could be wrong, and I'm willing to be wrong in this case, and good luck to them, but it doesn't excite me in any way whatsoever. I don't know whether that's because it's so damn cynical that they're just clearly just taking paychecks where they can get them now. And that's really, you know, go back to the North Carolina FC stuff. Basically, you take the paycheck bigger than the actual guy doing it. And that's a cynical move. But that's MLS. And if you choose, as I have long ago done, to support and show interest and talk about this league, you have to talk about this league for all that it's good for and all that it's bad for. And this is the more negative side of things with MLS. But here we are, and by the time they launch, and there's so many teams launching soon, like, how can you bloody keep track? Someone pointed out that there have been more expansion teams launched since Atlanta to the ones that have been announced now than the league started with. So, like, it's like, how can you be excited about them all?
Alexi Lawless, I was just gonna say, Dwayne, Alexi Lawless made but every year that the teams are going to start playing, and he starts at 10, right? And then it grows. And over the, like, from 2016 to 2022, yeah, it's like exponential almost.
Yeah, and the more people will point out quite rightfully that it mirrors what the NCAA, NASL, too many acronyms, NASL did in the 70s, which ultimately led to its demise. Now, what I would say to those people is that, again, they were expanding to anyone with a pulse and a checkbook back then.
I think we could probably had a team like in the NASL. Like,
yeah,
we could have.
It was like the more modern comparison is they expanded the way that the Arena League expands now.
You see how that goes.
Yeah, so Metro Stars, may they rest in peace.
The Canada Metro Stars. Bye-bye.
Anyway, so here we are. Look, I was just supposed to say St. Louis. Like, remember when St. Louis, like, what has been said about St. Louis since they've been launched? Nothing.
I forgot. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, St. Louis should get a team. Oh, wait, they're getting a team. That's how things move quickly. I have to remind myself, oh, yeah, Nashville's coming into the league next year. All right, Daniel Lovitz is in Nashville. Well, you're right. And to finish the show, let's finish on this thought. It's an expression that you told me off air about Charlotte, and we'll see if it still holds the case after the press conference. Is it the moment where the Fonz himself goes over that marine animal?
Like, jump the shark, yes.
Is it the jump the shark moment?
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, look, here's what I'll say as a final thought on the expansion stuff. And one of these markets, I'm pretty sure, is going to be a bomb. One of these markets is going to be another Atlanta. One of these markets is going to be a complete bomb. And
Tampa Bay Mutiny.
Yeah, at this point, I don't know if we can predict one. And I think that it's reasonable to suggest that they're expanding so fast into so many places that we don't necessarily know at such a high level. And the value of these franchises are getting pushed up and up and up, that I think it's reasonable that we're going to see another crew situation in a few years and where someone is looking to move it. You know what? It wouldn't surprise me. Where it is the Fire. If this new ownership doesn't work out, I could see the Fire being mothballed a la Chivas, and them relaunching with a true relaunch in Chicago. I could see them do that because that market's too important to them. There's going to be a failure in this league in the next few years, and it won't mean the end of the league. It won't. But it will mean that they should probably take some stock for it. That's my save this tweet of this show of this year, is that there will be an MLS team fail in the next 4 or 5 years. It will not mean the end of the league by any means. This league is fine. But it is an indicator that maybe they're a little bit greedy at the moment, we'll say.
Well, maybe we're going to start to see what we've seen in other places. What I mean is, in recent years in sports leagues, and let's just use two, well, actually three, because NBA did the same, and it's rare in baseball, though, but there is talks about the Tampa Bay Rays moving away from Tampa Bay. But relocation is going to be something that might become into reality of Major League Soccer before more expansion comes, or after the, maybe they'll stop at 32, and then before giving expansion, they'll relocate struggling franchises. That could be the case. We have seen in recent years, even teams that were not doing badly, like the Oakland Raiders moving to Las Vegas, like the St. Louis Rams moving to Los Angeles, because Los Angeles needed two football teams, right? Right? No, exactly, because the Chargers are there too, playing where the Galaxy plays. So we've seen relocations in the NHL too, the Thrashers of Atlanta, which was a new franchise in a weird market for hockey, and it didn't work, and they moved it back to a hotbed of hockey in Canada and Winnipeg. So maybe you'll see that model arrive in Major League Soccer in the next few years, relocation for struggling franchises before new expansions.
Yeah, well, that's why I always thought Sacramento might be the Quebec City of MLS in many ways. I don't know, San Diego, someone like there, I'm sure that they will come. Vegas might be one that they hold back as something they could always jump into if they need to. I mean, Vegas is the hot market in all sport right now, right?
But it'll be saturated before long, I believe. But sorry, it's not a show about Vegas.
Yeah, well, yeah. We'll wait until the... I think we talked about the lights once, but yeah, it's not something I have interest in talking about until that. I'm still angry that the Golden Knights exist, to be honest with you. But anyway, it's a different topic for a far different show. All right, on that note, Kevin, I'm going to stop talking about expansion because it almost bores me at this point. There's too much. I'm excited a little bit about Nashville because I think it's going to be a fun away trip. But other than that, and I think Miami is going to be interesting in a kind of like
watch it burn, like a watch it burn type of way. Like, yeah, everything's fine. It's all fine. The world's burning. Still no coach. Training camp opens in 32 days for Miami. Inter Miami, Internazionale, the Miami. And apparently we'll have a coach before January 1st, which will give the coach 3 weeks.
I have a wild prediction for the coach. You ready? You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
David Beckham.
Oh, my God. Worst case scenario. Like, okay, Thierry Henry's coaching in this league now. I'm not going to be one up by the Frenchman once again. I'm coming to coach. Sure, that's going to be a tire fire if I ever saw one. And I'm not talking about Chicago.
It is going to also be a tire fire, but
it's just going to be a tire fire, but for totally different reasons. On that note, we'll be back tomorrow with Simon Fudge talking about Canadian soccer and landscape in Division 2, and also Cavallini signing for the Whitecaps tomorrow, talking about Vancouver Whitecaps and more with Simon Fudge on Soccer Today at 11 a.m. Until then, if you want to have more of the Sports Podcast Network, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. Yesterday, 5 rings extra, looking at the 1976 Montreal Summer Olympics, part 2, looking at the gymnastics and the decathlon, the perfect tens, a show dedicated to Nadia Comaneci and Bruce Jenner. We hope that you give it a listen and that you appreciate the work that went with it. And until tomorrow, as always, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie, and we wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.